Well, good evening, everybody. This is Marco Bill, and it's time again for another show. Bigfoot Live Network broadcast, and folks, it's that time again every Wednesday evening, our Bigfoot Live radio show with our host, Mr. Tom Biscardi. If you'd like to join us in our live discussions during the program, just dial in and join us at 347-996-5877. That's 347-996-5877. Just dial in and wait for the moderator to announce your area code and bring you on to the show. And now, everybody, the man who put the big back into Bigfoot, our host and renowned Bigfoot researcher, Mr. Tom Biscardi. Good evening, Tom. How are you?
Hello, Marco Bill, and hello out to all these Bigfoot listeners here, there, and everywhere. This is Tom Biscardi coming to you live, L-I-V-E, that's right, live, from the Searching for Bigfoot Network. What a show we got ahead tonight, Marco Bill. I don't know how you do it. You come up with all these people, and my God, each week it gets bigger and bigger, and I'm getting these emails from everybody that all they keep on saying, the show goes by too darn quick. So I don't know how we're going to slow it down, Marco. I think it's just going to get better. But before we get into our guests and our mainline entertainment with our guys and brothers up in Montana, I'm going to put a shout-out to Demetra down there in Cambria. Haven't forgot you, kids. Frank LaMonaco down there in North Carolina. Thanks and welcome aboard, buddy. This guy's from my old neighborhood, East New York, down there in Brooklyn. Jason Walker, here's a guy from Ohio that's tricking out one of his, he's a long-haul jockey on one of these big rigs across country. Well, he's tricking this thing out. It's going to cost him 50, 60 large, and he's got a Bowflex on the thing. He's got to have infrared, and he's going to go out looking for for the creature himself somewhere, I think, in Missouri. Anyhow, welcome aboard, Jason, and wish you all the luck. Johnny Howe from Wilbraham, M.A., keep listening, buddy. Kudos out to you. Jacob, down there in Wisconsin. I don't know where I'd be without you guys. Every week, you guys are there, faithful as can be, listening in. And Eric, down there in Pennsylvania. Dave in Tennessee. And most of all, I don't want any of you people to remember, my good old Patrick Blue. Patrick Blue up there in Seattle, we haven't forgotten you, son. Our prayers go out to you each and every day, not just for me, my team, and all the Bigfoot listeners out there. There are miracles still to happen, and you're going to get better before you know it. Again, this is going out to you and all the other people out there in the Bigfoot world. Kudos to you. Let's get out there now to our mainline entertainment tonight. Who we got on the line, Marco Bill?
Well, tonight I think we have Bruce Schilt on the line right now, Tom.
Oh, we do.
Hiram, are you online?
Hiram Upham.
Hiram's
oh, that's Hiram Upham, too. Wow, what a great intro. Thank you, Marco Bill. Well, Bruce Schilt, my brother from another mother up in Montana. How are you?
Terrific, Tom.
Fantastic. And I understand that Hiram Upham, my other brother, how are you?
Good.
Fantastic, Hiram. Thank you guys so much for being on tonight. We got a great show, and we're going to go right into the meat and potatoes tonight, guys, if you don't mind. We'll start with you, Bruce, and you just stay right there on the line, too, Hiram.
Okay.
And chime in whenever you want. Bruce, tell them how this whole thing got started back in last January with you and the kids and around New Year's Day, I guess it was, or Eve. Tell them the whole story.
Okay, it was New Year's Day when we went out and I took my kids out along Cutbank Creek over there by where Hiram stays. But we were just going along the creek letting the kids play. And when we came home that evening, it wasn't quite dark, so they didn't want to come home yet. So we went up west of the house there, and there's a little lake up there was playing on it. My little girl seen some tracks, and she told me to come over and look at them, and I did, and I thought they were bear tracks, but they weren't bear tracks after we took a good look at them. And it was getting dark, so next morning we got up and we went over there real early. We took some pictures of them, and got some real good pictures, some Polaroids of them, and and with a reference of my kids standing alongside them, and we measured them. They were 18 inches long and 10 inches wide. But we was showing those pictures around town a little bit, and then the Glacier Reporter, the newspaper from Browning, got a hold of it, and they want to do a little story, so we gave them the pictures, and they put the pictures in, and they wrote a little story about it. And then that's when you guys heard about it, Tom, and you guys came over, and we went up and checked the lake out where the tracks were, and right there where the old tracks were frozen in the mud, there was a fresh track right on top of it, and you guys got a photograph of that. But I went up there one day when it was thawing out, and there was nobody with me. I went and took and poured some plaster in the track, and I didn't tell nobody about it. I just kept it. I still got it. But there was another instance before that. My brother-in-law, I was gold hunting with him up in the mountains, and we come across this cave, and we thought it was a bear cave. But then when we explained it to you, Tom, you're the one that pointed out that bears don't make nests out of grass, and they don't gather berries and bring them to their cave. So that's
what a great mind. You still remember that?
Yeah, yeah, I do.
So the thing about it is, let's stay focused first on this print, okay?
Okay.
So then it hit the Bigfoot alert, and it came across my desk, and that's when I called you. Remember
yeah.
that?
Yeah, I remember you calling.
And we had doings about 2-3 days, and I said we'd be up there and check things out and come up and meet you and check the area out and what have you.
Yeah.
Lo and behold, never knowing how remote the area really is. Now, for the listeners that don't know, okay, maybe you can explain to them, Bruce. You're up there in Kiowa.
Yeah.
Okay, and you're also on you're Blackfeet on the reservation, correct?
Yeah. Right.
Okay. See, people don't understand all these things. All right. They just think that you're just a normal guy or what have you, which you are. You've been blessed. Okay?
Yeah.
There's not many people that get to see what you've seen as well as Hiram, okay? And we're going to get into his story in a minute. So, did you call Fishing Game?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We had this checked out. We were skeptical about it. We didn't know. We had to have somebody that was official to check it out. We called the Fish and Game, and the supervisor or director or something, the head of the Fish and Game guy, he came up and he looked at the tracks, he took pictures of them, and he measured them. And while he was doing that, I was standing there and I asked him, I said, are these bear tracks? I said, can you definitely tell me if these are bear tracks? And if they're not, can you say they're definitely not bear tracks? And he said, yeah, I can definitely tell you that they're definitely not bear tracks. He said, but I don't know what they are. I can't say what they are.
Right.
But they're not bear tracks.
You know, I want you to tell our listeners out there, Bruce, if you would, what does the temperatures get to? And when we were there, the thing I remembered was at nighttime, it got down to 13 below zero. What do the temperatures get to there in the winter?
Well, I've seen them knock the thermometer out, knock the bottom out of it, and I don't know how cold that gets, 40 or 50 below.
Yeah. And, that's what I want our listeners to understand. See, they're living the story through your eyes as you're telling it to them, okay?
Uh-huh.
And they don't know what the surroundings are out there. And that's why I want this show to be so unique versus all these others. okay? Everybody embellishes and everything. You know, it's amazing. When we first came up there and we went up to Hiram's place, I thought we were at the tip of the world where all those mountain ridges had met and you could see all those snow peaks and everything else. And I was just so amazed to know that there's still places out there that have been unchallenged, I guess is the word, okay? And unexplored. And there's a reason for it. It's because it's so darn cold. I mean, it's gorgeous, don't get me wrong. But here's territory that we've had Bob DeRozier from Home Security takes the helicopter out there, and goes up on these ridges and sees these footprints in the snow and these creatures walking on these ridges. Now, you were coming across and telling us a good story, and I'd like you to implement it now about the guy in the cave that knew where these creatures were.
Okay, yeah, we live about 20 minutes from the Rocky Mountains, and that's as the crow flies west. And we were up there one day. We drove up far as we could go, and then we carried our gold pans back in the park there, and we were panning gold in the park, but we were following this little trail alongside of this creek, and went up right along the edge of this mountain that where there's cliffs and stuff, and big rocks and stuff, and right on the side of the trail there was a cave right to the right of us, and We went and we kind of peeked in that cave and looked around, but we could smell this awful smell.
Yeah.
And we got scared, and we thought it was a bear. But, you know, the bear don't gather grass and make a nest and, you know, gather berries and stuff. And that's what it was in that cave, but we were afraid. We thought it was a bear, and we got out of there. And we forgot it until you mentioned that bears don't make nests like that, you know?
Right.
And so it must have been a lair. It had to be a lair of a Bigfoot because, you know, that's the strangest thing I ever seen.
Since your encounter up there, Bruce, how many stories have come across you?
I have gathered maybe 30. And I have checked every single one of them out. They're all authentic. And there's eyewitnesses, and there's even police reports with photographs of the tracks and everything. And the stories are true. The Indians don't like to tell stories like that, but, you know, if somebody breaks the ice, and then they'll come through, and they'll tell you their stories. You know,
they'll come forward, yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember when we were up there, as we were rolling through town, how they were stopping us on the road, remember?
Yeah, yeah.
And they said, come, you've got to come here. You've got to come here.
Yeah.
There's sightings. There's footprints going through the snow.
Yeah.
And I was just amazed. I was in shock. I said, my God. I said, this is an untapped source. I don't think anybody's been up in this area, and apparently nobody had been up there.
No,
So you had made this discovery on your own. Now that leads us to when you were doing your investigative work up there with these 30 stories and people that have had these encounters, you ran across Hiram Upham.
Yeah.
Okay? And Hiram, you on the phone?
Yes.
It's good to hear you, my brother. How's the family? Everybody okay?
Everybody's fine.
Good. By the way, I got to tell you, the movie is done. I sent them out yesterday, so I saved some postage. So I sent an extra one into Bruce, so Bruce has got yours.
Oh, okay.
So I guess it should be there tomorrow, and you guys tell me what you think, okay?
All right.
After you see it. Now, Hiram, tell us the story from the beginning. Are the girls on the line also?
Yes, maybe I'll have Terry kind of talk first and then Yvonne.
Okay.
Because they're the ones that sort of had the first encounters before I...
That would be excellent. I want our listeners to hear the story from the exact source, from the horse's mouth, let's say. And I remember it like it was yesterday. Carrie was the one that had the first encounter before she called you and Yvonne. So if Carrie's on the phone, is she on the phone?
Yes, she's right here. Go ahead.
Hi, Carrie.
Hi, Tom.
How are you, hon?
Good.
Good to hear your voice. By the way, you came out beautiful on the film. Wait till you see it.
Oh.
You were very articulate. You were just you. You and Mom and Dad were just perfect. So do me a favor. Tell our listeners out there how this whole thing got started and what role you played in this thing, okay? You got the stage. You're on, girl. Go.
Okay. Well, I guess it was in July of 1999 when I moved home from college, and I was out here in the country, out in the, what you were calling the wilderness out here.
Yeah.
And we were just sitting, drinking coffee and visiting, and I happened to notice the cows running around across on the other side of the ridge. So I was watching them and wondering what they were doing, and so they caught my attention. So as my mom was telling me stories, I continued to watch the cows and how they were behaving, and finally one cow came running down, and she was looking in one direction, and I began to follow her stare to where she was looking. And when I looked up into this little clearing area, there was this creature standing there, and it was all black and had hair on it. And as I looked at it, I didn't even know what I was seeing. I yelled at my mom, and I said, "Oh my God!" I said, "What is that?" And my mom turned around, and I was trying to focus her into where the thing was standing. So we started to turn around and walk back into the brush, and I grabbed my dad's binoculars, and I began to try to focus in on it. And I just caught him when he was heading into the brush line. And I was so excited that I took the binoculars away, and I was talking to my mom and trying to describe to her what I saw. But she continued to watch over there, and then she saw some other things that were heading into the brush, but I didn't see them because I was so excited about the huge creature I had seen. So that was kind of our first, I guess, visual sight of this thing. But previous years we had heard, you know, the screaming and the
vocalizations. Right.
The yowling and everything. Before that, you know, we would hear those screams break in day or at night time, you know, we'd have those screams sounding, but we never saw anything, and we didn't know what, you know, what those sounds were coming from or what they were or anything. And in 99 was the first time we had seen that thing standing there.
Carrie, for our listeners' sake, because you know, they just hear you, and unless you give them a verbal visualization of where you live, tell them where you live. How many people, like everybody lives in a community in a city, right? And their houses are right next to each other. What's your closest neighbor?
Well, our closest neighbor lives across the river here, maybe, a quarter of a mile away from us, but after that, you know, everybody is really, the houses are really spaced out going down the valley that heads toward Browning. So.
And that's the point I'm trying to have you bring out in your terminology. I know I've been there. I've been to you guys' place, okay?
Yes.
In other words, you know, guys from the city that say we're going to the country, this is more than country where you guys are. I mean, from your porch, from your breakfast room there, you can see all those mountain ranges that all come to one.
Right.
I mean, it's just so gorgeous. And to see the migrational path of these creatures as they would travel, and that's the reason why you guys are more prone to have an encounter than somebody who lives in the city is what I'm trying to bring out, you know.
Yeah.
Okay,
well,
so no, let me stop you now. Go on to what happened next.
not just do we have, I mean, you know, we have bears walking through our yard. We've had a moose down by the porch here and deer and, you know, so we're so far up towards the mountains that we get a lot of wild animals that just walk, you know, right through our yard. But anyway, after we seen the creature, we didn't, you know, I didn't even know what to think, you know, and it took a few weeks just for me to really understand what I had seen. And then when it started to come into fall time around October, our dog brought up a foot, and all this fur was tore off of it, but it still had the flesh on it, and the nails and everything like that was all still intact. And so I went out to get it because it looked like a hand, because it was about almost the size of a human hand, and I didn't know what she had. So I ran out. I didn't want her to eat it because I thought it might be human, the way it looked. And so I took it away from her, but I could tell it looked like more like a foot rather than a hand after I began to look at it. And I began to walk around the house, and then I seen another part of the animal or whatever it was up on the hillside. So I went up there to get it. When I looked at it, it was the rib cage, and it still had some of the intestines on the inside. So I didn't know what to do, so I came back and I called my husband. I said, you need to come out right away. And then I called my mom and dad, and I told them, they were in Great Falls, which is 2.5 hours away or 2 hours away. And I told them, you need to come home right away. I said, because we found these things that we don't know what they are. And then my husband suggested we call the Fish and Game and Wildlife to come and look at it. He said, if anyone knows what this is, they should know. But when they got here, they didn't know what it was. And they were saying it was a bear, you know, leg, and then they said it was something else, and they took them away, and we never did see them again. But it just so happened that our dog went left the house and came back, and she had the other foot with her. So
amazing, just totally amazing. I know when we saw it, okay, on the film, of course, because Dad went ahead and buried it there in the backyard, and all those years had transpired. I know we dug 4 or 5 different holes and couldn't find it. But nevertheless, Mom had taken samples of that to the university, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell our listeners what they came up with.
I'll go ahead and turn it to my mom, Yvonne. She's on the line right now. She can
Oh, okay. Hi, Yvonne.
Hi.
Hi, how are you, darling?
Oh, okay.
Good, good. Why don't you tell our listeners when you took the samples of the leg and foot and of the meat and hair to the university, what happened?
I didn't take the foot down. We fed the foot for, you know, for a while.
Uh-huh.
We just took a sample of the fur down there.
Uh-huh.
And I took it to the... where they keep the, like, the biology stuff.
Uh-huh.
And they took it. And to my knowledge, that's where it's at. They still got it.
Yeah, because I remember on the documentation, it says the unknown beast that's been unidentified, or beast roaming Kiowa, and it was unidentified. And it blows my mind because we tried... getting a hold of the people there at the university, and apparently it's like everything else, you know, either it's gone or nobody knows anything about it.
Mm-hmm. And they didn't know what it was. They went back there a few times and asked them if they ever, you know, found out what it was.
It's right, Carl.
Mm-hmm.
What it was, and they didn't know. But what Carrie saw, I didn't see that because I told her. I said, it must be a bear because here comes its cubs. But see, what I saw was two little and more, you know. Well, I just wanted, I just related to cubs because, that's, you know, that's what we're familiar with, is bears up here.
Right, because you had never seen one of these creatures before.
No, but more and more I think about it, they weren't running like, you know, cubs kind of run like pups, you know.
Right.
These were running like their hind legs were, you know, like a monkey would run.
Right.
The way they were
mm-hmm.
running. And there was
right.
two of them, they were running behind, following into the brush line.
Mm-hmm.
And then the cattle were just running around in a circle, and they just made a big circle there, like they were just, you know, just going crazy or something.
Like defending their own.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those two little things followed, and they just went into the brush line. And it was about 2 months later. This happened in July, August, about 2 months later when our dog lost those remains up. And it looked more like it came from one of the smaller ones. So either the smaller ones got it, I don't know, but, you know, just what happened, if it got attacked or just, you know, I don't know, but because up to your knees is how that included the gift.
You know, Yvonne, I haven't forgotten. Tell our listeners out there what the Blackfeet call these creatures.
The older, you know, people, the elders, they always scare their kids that they say, Imoidipi.
Yeah.
Hairy person will get you, you know, to stay in, you know, not to be out at night, but hairy person will get you.
Right.
And then just recently, when we start hearing about Bigfoot, they say, oh, Sika. No, Bigfoot. Oh, the gun.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, this is Lyle Billis.
Uh-huh. Wow.
Yeah, Lyle Billis.
Hold on, Lyle. Hi. Just stay right there for a second.
Yeah.
Okay, Yvonne. Listen, we're going into the next hour with the rest of the people. Stay on the line. I want you to listen to the rest of the stories that you're going to hear. God bless you guys. And by the way, what do you do for a living, Yvonne?
Well, I teach the bilingual language for the school.
Uh-huh.
And Hiram, well, we also pastor.
Uh-huh. And Hiram is the pastor there at one of the churches, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And Carrie, what do you do?
I'm the caregiver coordinator for our senior center.
All worthwhile jobs. God bless each and every one of you guys. I'm going to be seeing you real soon. You should have the movie tomorrow. After you see it, give me a call. Tell me what you think. Stay on the line. We've got some interesting guests. Thanks so much for you guys. Lyle, are you on the phone?
Yeah, I'm on the phone.
Well, it's good to hear you, buddy. We were expecting you last week.
Yes.
Our prayers went out to your son.
I
hope he's okay on that motorcycle.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me fill in our listeners who you are, Lyle.
Well, yeah.
This is Lyle Billet, all you listeners out there. He's the one that was nice enough to, if you go on the Bigfoot Live Radio Show website, on the left, you'll see it. It'll say, look here. A picture of a Bigfoot killed in 1894, and you'll actually see there's something that's been dead
Robert
there. And
yep.
Hold on, Bobby. And
yep.
You'll see the thing that, and I'll tell you what, it kind of looks like a Bigfoot there. And this was dating back to 1894. So why don't you tell us the story? Tell the listeners the story, would you, Lyle?
Yeah. Well, all I know is that I got the pictures from a friend that I just located today, and he will be contacting his father where he got them from, and then he will know more about this Halliday guy that he got them from. But anyway, it is a glass plate photograph, which is quite old, and we're familiar with lots of cougars on Vancouver Island here. There's probably 1,500, they estimate, on the island, and this definitely is not a cougar. He's got his legs look to be about 5 inches through with the hair on it, so it's not a cougar leg, that's for sure. And it's a very interesting picture, and I'm going to look deeper and deeper into it and see where it all come from. But it was shot in 1894 along the Yellowcom River. It's around Lillooet, B.C., and the Hudson Bay Company that had the forestry contract They didn't want nobody to see these pictures. They took and hushed everything up, and the actual guy that was there broke into the place and took these two pictures, photographed them off the other picture somehow, and that's about all I know about it.
You know, it's totally amazing. I'm looking at it right now, okay,
yeah.
Lyle, and,
yeah.
And you are so right. As the thing is laying profile, you can see its buttocks and its
yeah.
lower back and its torso of its upper shoulders. And
but
its
you
neck.
Can see a good sketch of its right leg, and that's
oh, you
what
bet.
Really
you
turned
bet.
Me
I'm,
on.
I can see that right here. I'm looking at it. I'm looking at the long arm.
Yes.
You know, just like a primate.
But, you know, if you look at the white patch on its mouth area, and you look horizontal, the head length is quite long. If it's a cougar's head is quite round.
Correct.
This has got lots of depth to its head.
You bet.
So it has a little tummy sticking out there in front, just under its paws. So
yep.
It's a very interesting picture. But I'm going to dig a lot deeper to try and come up with more history on this 1894.
Let me.
Mammal.
I have some news for you, Lyle.
Yeah.
John Lessard sent
John,
me an article.
Yeah.
Sent
he
me an
brought
article,
it. He, yes.
And the article showed that the first encounters up there in B.C.
Yeah.
of a Bigfoot, guess what the year was?
Yes.
1894, Lyle.
No, is that right, eh?
Swear to God. Now, Marco Bill has just been so inundated with so much work, but he's going to be putting that up there. He has the copy of it, and he's going to be putting it underneath
yeah.
here, which tells the whole story about the
yeah.
first sighting up there in B.C.
Yes.
But I want to thank you so much for bringing this to our attention. And would you be kind enough, if you do find out more about this, let us know?
Well, this friend of mine has a John that sent you the picture on his internet. I don't have an internet, but
uh-huh.
he put it. He sent this. I gave it to him, and he heard your program, and he sent it. This picture in you, so
yeah.
you got to thank him as well.
Oh, I do, and
yeah.
and
I appreciate him doing
lot,
that.
And he's a great guy. But,
yeah.
But if you can find out more as you researched it,
well, this is what I'm going to do.
Generation, let
yeah.
us know, would you?
I'm going to keep in contact, but I just run into the fellow today. I never talked to him, but I found his address. So I'm going to look him up, and then we'll go back.
Okay, Lyle, stay on the line, listen in. You're going to hear a lot of good stuff with everybody else. Is Dave Lettingham on?
Dave Lettingham?
Yeah.
Lyle,
what you need to do now is just press the 6 button and listen, okay?
Okay, you bet. I'll do that.
Okay,
yeah,
thank you, Lyle.
Yeah,
is Dave Lettingham on?
Yeah.
You there? Hello, Dave?
This is Robert.
This is, who's this, Bobby O'Keefe?
Right.
Okay, Robbie, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
Good. Robbie, tell everybody where you're from up there in Oregon.
I'm from a little town, Yamhill.
Okay. Now, I'm gonna give you a moniker. I already have. You don't know about it yet. But I'm going to call you the Bigfoot Whisperer. Okay?
Okay.
Now, you remember hearing about a horse whisperer, one that can communicate with horses and what have you?
Right.
Okay? Well, because I've gotten a great report from my guys. And they said that you've got some ability that they've never seen before. And that's a big compliment coming from Lee, Tommy, and Jabba Bob, I got to tell you. And opportunity to see you or meet you in person. I did talk to you on the phone, and that's what we're doing again now. And I know that you're going into the hospital tonight, so let's try to make this brief. Would you be kind enough to tell our listeners out there, Bobby, how your encounter was, the first encounter that you had?
Well, I was sitting underneath this full-growth tree with this big fern between my legs, all camouflaged in, and I was bow hunting for elk, and I began calling, and as I heard chipmunks in the background making noise, letting me know that something was around that they didn't like, I quit calling. I then witnessed something coming out, and I thought that it was an elk, and it wasn't. It was a great big creature that was reddish brown, and it had like a blue mark underneath its eye.
Wow.
It was quite interesting.
When did you know that you had this ability to send out these calls, vibes, whatever you may call it, where and see these things come back to you?
What's that again?
How long have you had this ability
I've been calling in animals for years now.
Uh-huh.
I mean, long time. And this is the first time in a long time that I've ever called in one of these. I was out there with your crew. I was using an elk call, and I was able to call in a black bear when we were out together.
Wow. Wow. Totally amazing. I look forward to meeting you, Bobby. We've had so much going on, as you know, I'm sure the guys have told you, and we're traveling all over this country right now, and right now is the migrational period of these things. And I look forward to meeting you. If you want to listen on, just press your 6 key, and you'll be able to listen to the whole entire show. We'll have you back on at another segment, and I know you've got to get to the hospital. Best of luck. Our prayers go out to you. And until the next time, Bobby, God bless you. Ray Crow, you on the line?
Yeah, I'm here.
Ray, how are you?
Okay, I was listening in with interest.
Well, thank you so much.
Down in Yamhill.
Well, that's great. That's great, Ray. Listen, I want you to, if you'd be so kind, to tell everybody where you're at. You're up there in Oregon somewhere, aren't you?
I'm on the outskirts of Portland at a little place called Hillsboro.
Now, you're the director of what Bigfoot organization up there?
The International Bigfoot Society.
International Bigfoot Society. How long?
For 15 years, uh-huh.
Wow, 15 years. Wasn't that, didn't Peter Byrne have something to do with that at one time?
Well, he was one of our members, and still is, as a matter of fact. He's helped us out a lot, and we've exchanged information with him over the years.
Oh, that's fantastic. Tell everybody what it's like to be a director of this International Bigfoot Society, and what you do, and how many people belong to this organization.
Big fish in a small pond type of thing. We have around 200 members scattered all around the world, Switzerland and England and Japan and places like that. And we get an awful lot of information that comes our way, so we put out a pretty hefty newsletter every month.
Okay. And you get a lot of calls from people that, you know, they've seen the creature and what have you?
Yeah, a lot of calls. A couple of them I fielded it off to you even. I hope you got some good out of them.
As a matter of fact, the Bigfoot Whisperer that was just on was one of them.
Oh, that was, okay. I didn't
that
know
was Bobby O'Keefe from Charlene. Remember Charlene who had called you?
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah, and thank you for that. Keep them coming in because the crew is out there, as you know. And they're going to be zigzagging all across this country before you know it, too. And I got to tell you guys out there, all you listeners out there, this gentleman here, Ray Crow, has got to be one of the most respected people in this Bigfoot field. He just stays straight in the middle. You know, I've never seen him badmouth anybody all the times I've talked to him. And he has a great newsletter out there. And tell the people how they can get subscribe to that, would you?
It's just $20 for 10 issues. To me, Ray Crow, 225 Northeast 30th Avenue, Hillsboro, Oregon.
Now, do you have a website or something? Ray, do you have a website or anything?
I do. It's called internationalbigfootsociety.com.
So they can get a hold of you that way also?
Yes, uh-huh.
Okay, give them your phone number out there again, Ray, would you?
503-640-6581.
And ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you, it'd be the best $20 you ever sent, and I guarantee you this. I think it's still tax deductible, isn't it?
Sure is.
Because you're a nonprofit.
No, they get a product for that. Donations are tax deductible.
Right, right. That's fantastic. Okay, well, Ray, thank you so much. Listen in. Just push your 6 button on your phone pad there and listen in. We got a bunch of good people listening in to us here tonight. Who else is on the line? Oh, who's here now? Hello?
It's Larry.
Hey, Arkansas Larry, how are you feeling?
Well, real good, real good. Now, I've been a little bit under the weather, but I'm doing real good.
So those prayers helped, didn't they?
They sure did.
Well, that's good, Larry. What's going on down that neck of the woods?
Raining.
Raining, huh?
Raining big time.
Okay, all right. What happened with that Indian down there with, did you get a chance to check that out yet?
Well, no, I actually haven't because I've just in the last couple of days been feel like being able to get around and do something, and I just haven't got to it yet.
Oh, I understand. I understand. Well, a lot of us have been under the weather, Larry. Mary okay?
Yeah, she's having some headaches and this and that, but she's still taking care of me.
Oh, God bless her. God bless her. Okay. Uh-huh. All right. Well, listen, let's see who else is online. Just put your six button there, Larry. Who else is on the line?
Hey, this is Andrew Martin.
Hey, Andrew. Hold on there. I want to say hello to Jason Walker. I already did. Jason, if you're out there, down there in Ohio, I already talked to you at the top of the hour, but I'm going to mention you again. I noticed that you just called in. You might want to call in, Jason, to area code 347-996-5877. How you doing there, Andrew?
I am here.
Well, good to hear your voice, buddy. Listen, why don't you tell my listeners out there what you do and who you're with, and because we're going to talk to them about the picture that was taken there at Bucks Grove in Illinois, that shadow, that mist thing there. What do you think it is, Andrew?
I haven't had a good time to really look at it on the Internet, so I'll probably be crawling upstairs and looking at that pretty soon. But my name's Andrew Martin, and I'm from Houston, Texas, and I am a photographer. I have my own studio and company, and I'm going to school to become a helicopter pilot. It's just for fun, I guess. And I looked at one of your images online from one of your expeditions, and I thought I noticed something in there, and I sent it to you, and that's where we kind of started.
Oh, yeah. You're the one that was in the forest.
Yeah, that was y'all's image, and now that image is pretty pixelated, and I could probably matrix anything out of that image, but it looked pretty convincing to me, but I don't know if y'all ever took a look at it.
Yes, we did, and I got you confused with one of the other guys, this Dave Lettingham from TAP. Are you on the line? Dave's not on the line. He was the one that was talking about the one from the image in February. But now I remember the one that you're talking about.
Yeah,
Andrew, that was incredible. And thank you for depicting that from us, because I've got my guys taking a real good look at that right now. That was just incredible. It was off the hook. Anything else that you see out there or any of our listeners, when you're going through the pictures online, if there's anything that you see there that looks odd or different or maybe a creature, don't hesitate to call us. And thank you for that, Andrew. You know what I might want you to do? Is on the BigfootLiveRadioShow.com, there's a picture there of a creature supposedly that was killed in 1894.
Erwin Alpert.
And take a look at that, would you?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Is that the one that I've seen a couple images that have been killed supposedly in the last 100 years, and it kind of looks like they're dead ape laying there?
Yeah, the one that's on its side, the one in British Columbia. You take a look at that. We got Erwin Alpert on the phone. Just press your six button there, and you'll listen to the whole show. Andrew, thanks a lot for calling in. Erwin, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Tom.
How are you, good buddy?
I'm doing fine.
What's it like down there in Missouri?
It's kind of misty and cloudy and rainy and everything else.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Now, Erwin, tell our listeners out there how long you've been involved in this Bigfoot game and the regions that you're heading out.
Actually, Tom, I started back in 67 around the same time you did.
Wow.
And I've covered a six-state area. I was involved with the group back in 74 who I met up with after I did some research on the Momo creature in Louisiana, Missouri, in 1972. And I joined up with them, and after a while they got out of it, and I stayed with it. And finally dwindled down to me, lonesome me, and I'm still getting calls every once in a while.
Isn't that amazing?
What's been the most memorable experience or encounter that you had, Erwin?
I would have to say 1972 with the Momo creature.
Now, explain to the people out there, you know, they know that there's all different names, but I'm sure there's a lot of them that have never heard what the Momo means and who gave it that nomenclature.
That was given because it was the Missouri Monster.
There you go.
And it happened in July of 1972.
I
did not get down there until 2 weeks after the initial sighting. But the night I was down there, there were about 23 people down there. In fact, they had two people from the Air Force doing a story from Rontula, Illinois. And all of a sudden, we were sitting around the campfire, and this dog started up the hill, and somebody said, "Where's the dog going?" And they said, "Well, it's chasing the cat." And I said, "I don't think so. The cat's sitting over there." And we all jumped up and started up this hill. And just your typical, you could hear branches breaking in the distance, something heavy knocking branches down. You could smell the rotten egg smell, stench.
Uh-huh.
And we continued on. The dogs came back, as typical. The next day, they had taken us down to an area to see some footprints down by the Mississippi River. What was kind of unique about them, there were two footprints. They were 17 and a half inches long by 9 inches across at the ball of the foot. The back footprint had a piece of Coke bottle that had been pushed straight down into the heel. Yet there was no blood around.
Wow.
And these prints were in an area under brush where people, you know, if you were faking them, you'd want to make sure they were out in the open so people would find them.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to look for them.
Wow.
Austin.
Oh, well, hold on, Erwin. Is this Austin and Tyler?
Yeah.
Erwin, hold on. Now, just press your six button there for a second. You guys out in the brush as we're speaking right now?
No. Nope.
We also have a caller on the line.
No, we're in the office.
Oh, wow. You're okay. Oh, hold on. Let's see who this caller is. What area code, Mark?
Area code 352, Tom, and I'm going to put him on right now. Area code?
Okay, area code 352. Who do we have on the line?
Well, I got to unmute him here. Here he is. 352, you're unmuted and live on the air.
Hello?
This is Jason Walker.
Hey, Jason Walker. I gave you some kudos out there early at the top of the show and about 10 minutes ago also.
Yeah, I heard the second one. I got online about 10 minutes late, and I missed the first one.
Yeah, all you listeners out there, this is the gentleman down there in Ohio, originally from Florida, that's tricking out one of his rigs. And I'll give you 2 minutes. Go ahead. Tell everybody what you're doing to your rig and where you're going to go with it.
Well, I've just stretched the frame on my truck. And I mean, I only came into the shop to get my frame stretched, and you got to get the rest of it painted and everything and the whole job done. But I needed to put some equipment and a bicycle and a motorcycle and an exercise machine up on the frame of my truck to get in shape and have transportation to and from the truck, you know, in and out of the woods pretty easily and efficiently. A couple of places I'm going to go to. They're state parks, and they don't allow motor vehicles, so I'm going to use a mountain bike to get back and forth and cover the distance, you know. And then a couple of national forests I'm going to go to is allows motorcycles in there. So
okay, let's get down to the meat and potatoes here, Jason. Why don't you tell my listeners out there how you're going to be different than everybody else, like you were telling me the other day?
How I'm going to be different?
Yeah, how you're going to be different and be successful and get one of these things.
Well, I kind of reverse engineered it. I kind of looked into the future 2 years ahead of time, and pretended that, you know, somebody went and did it. Somebody went out there, they captured one, they got undisputable video. They sat there and, you know, they had it chained to a tree or whatever. They were able to contain it somehow for a day or two and sit there and just get day and night video footage nonstop, and then released it, and then brought all the information back to the world: hair samples, blood samples, close-up pictures of their eyes and samples all over their body, and maybe even yanked out a tooth, who knows. And then I went from that point backwards. And I spent 2 years thinking about it. How did that guy accomplish that? How did he get that done? And I went from that point backwards.
Hold on for a second. Hold on. Who's out there that's got a TV on or something else? Please push your 6 button so we can all hear what's going on here. Is that you, Larry? Or is that you, Erwin?
It must be a relative too, then, right?
Erwin, just press your 6 button, would you? Because we got a girl back there talking in the background. I don't know if it's a TV or a family member. I'm sorry, Jason. Go ahead.
Anyway, so I imagined it getting done, and I reverse engineered it from there. How did that person go and get that done? How would he have done it? How would it have happened? Okay, and I'm a one-man operation, so I got to think along the lines of one guy going into the woods, spending enough time in the woods in the right place, and how would he have done it? Well, you got to mask your scent. You got to learn how to stalk through the woods like an animal. You got to go out in the bush and live, literally live out there for a week or so at a time like an animal. That means no campfires. That means no setting up tents. That means taking along a little bit of dehydrated food here and there that you can munch on. And you follow a waterway, and that'll supply yourself with water for 7 days or 2 weeks or whatever. And you survive out there for that 2 weeks, or you know, and you just hike. You sleep during the day, you hike through the woods at night. You follow a waterway, and you just work your way through the woods as quietly as possible. And
Jason, listen to me. I appreciate what you're going to do and how you're going to do it. The thing that caught my eye and my interest was the deal about these new darts, these DNA darts you were talking about. Now,
yeah.
That's what I want you to tell my listeners about. Could you be kind enough to spend 20 seconds, 30 seconds on that?
On a DNA dart?
Yeah.
I'm sure everybody's heard of what DNA darts are, or biopsy dart. It hits the animal. It cores out a small flesh sample. And then one small flesh sample is good enough for at least a dozen, 10 or 12 viable DNA samples out of that little core sampling. And it's not going to, when it gets tested, it's not going to register as a bear, it's not going to register as a deer, it's going to register as unknown.
So,
agreed?
What's the bottom line?
The bottom line...
new compared to what's been doing now? All the stuff that we come back shows that it's not on record or unknown. So, but nobody's
right.
Got the balls enough to come forward in the scientific world to say, hey, man, there's an unknown species out there.
All right, let me cut you in on something.
Yeah, cut me in on something.
It is illegal for human cloning. Do you understand? It is illegal to clone a human being. But thoroughbred racehorses, a prize bull, they're all legal to clone.
Yeah.
Hell, I'm gonna spend $50,000 and I'm gonna clone my own dog. And all I need is a piece of hair to clone my dog. What if I get a viable DNA sample? Right? The rest of the world doesn't have to believe where that DNA came from.
Uh-huh.
But I take that DNA to a geneticist and I hand him $100,000 and I tell him that there's more to come. You know, he'll concoct me this DNA and grow one from scratch.
Interesting story. It's all legal.
And we would insert it.
The line. Hold on. Just push your button 6, would you? And listen on to the rest of the story. Austin, Tyler, you there?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, guys. Why don't you tell everybody where you guys are calling from and what your research has been all about?
All right, well, we're calling from Greencastle, Indiana, and we, the last caller on there was from Ohio, wasn't he?
Yeah.
We're from Greencastle, Indiana, and we're agreeing a lot with him, like about, like, in the wild and stuff and how important it is and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And just, like, adapt to the environment, and we just try to do, like, basic research and advanced, mix it in together and try to do what we know and what we have to get any stuff we can.
Now, I understand you guys had some game cameras and stuff out in the field, and you guys were going through some some of the footage. What have you actually found? Anything?
Well, actually, we just got a game camera and some night vision and some pheromone chips, and we're ready to use those anytime whenever we go out in the wild next. And actually, we've July 9th of this year, we found a footprint, and we found a couple hairs in it, which were going to actually be getting tested and seeing what they are soon.
I hope you guys didn't contaminate them. Now, tell my listeners out there how you got in touch with us.
Well, actually, we found out about you, like, just pretty much through your website and, like, you know, the Crypto Mundo website, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you know that website.
So then you contacted us, and then I remember that weren't you guys at one time in one of our hot spots in Illinois?
Yeah, we went to full Tyler, and just Tyler went to Funk's Grove.
Right, right. Well, I'm going to give you some information, and within the next 2 weeks, we're coming out to Indiana. So what I need you to do is to record, document, get phone numbers, and head people that's been involved in any of these encounters, because we're going to use you as our home base when we come down there to Indiana, and we're going to go out into the rough, into the brush, and we're going to bring you with us, okay?
All right, that sounds good, and we've actually got, I mean, a lot of, like, where Tyler lives and he stays, I mean, around, like, his, like, home additions and his woods, I mean, we've had a couple of friends, and a lot of people we know have sightings and encounters and stuff, and believe it's
incredible. Well, you document all that stuff for us, and
yeah.
My directors will be in touch with you real soon. We'll have you back on the show, and we'll be out there and investigate with you out in the field. Push your number 6 button on your phone pad, and you can listen in. Who have I not talked to tonight? Is there anybody online that I have not talked to? Tony Pace, are you online? Erwin, are you still online? Dave Lettingham, are you online? Okay. Do you have a Bob or Tommy? You online?
Yeah, well, here, Tom. How are you doing?
Good. We're coming down to that last minute or two, guys. Why don't you let the listeners know what's happened over this last 8-9 days that you guys have been out in the field. But make it brief.
Well, Tom, you know, we started up going up north, close to the Washington border, northern Oregon, and met some very fine people and got to check out a few sightings in that area. That's where we met Bobby O'Keefe and
Bigfoot Whisperer. That's his new handle, by the way.
Yeah, Bigfoot Whisperer. That's where we met the Bigfoot Whisperer and Charlene and Greg Greg McMillan. Greg Helton, yeah. And we had a lot of places to check. We met a guy up there who said he had a 2-day encounter with one of these animals up in this area. And I taped the interview. I have a picture of the area that when I get back into the office, I'll be able to share with you.
Fantastic, Bobby.
Interesting stuff. Interesting stuff. It'll all be on the website within the next few days. So.
And that's what everybody's writing in. When are you going to post this new stuff? You know, we got all that expensive equipment on the out in the field. Maybe you can start putting it on for us, would you, buddy?
Yeah, we're going to start. You know, I just got back last night, so I've got a lot to get done before I can sit down at a computer in a quiet place and start writing up some of these stories.
Well, geez, Bob, a whole 24 hours gone by, and you haven't done nothing? Boy, I'm surprised.
I have done something, and my wife said thank you. And,
I hear you. Listen, Bobby, it's time to go. It's another one of those quick hours. I'll be on the phone talking to you. My son on the line?
Yes, he is. There he is.
Tommy?
Hey.
How are you, son?
I'm doing wonderful. How about you?
Okay, you guys, kudos out to you guys. I understand you've got a lot accomplished in the last 8 days. I'll be with you before you know it. Thanks for all your participation and everything else. All you Bigfoot listeners out there, all my guests out there, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. Tell a friend. Let's make this the hottest Bigfoot show on the www.
kudos going out to all of you people. God bless you. Till next time.
Well, folks, once again, it's time to say so long, and we'd like to thank Mr. Tom Biscardi and his guests and the Bigfoot team for joining us, and we'd especially like to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in. This is Marco Bill saying we'll see you next Wednesday evening for some more Bigfoot Live radio show entertainment with Mr. Tom Biscardi and his team. Now, until then, keep the Bigfoot live, and we'll keep Bigfooting. Good night now.